Blog Talk Radio.
I don't know what happened here. Well, good evening, everybody. This is Whirl with Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit, and I'm somewhere out in California. Yeah, actually, I'm in Sutter Creek, California, at the Days Inn, and I visited Folsom, and as a matter of fact, somebody from Folsom Tourism will be on the air to talk, but in the meantime, I think I've been like eating and drinking the entire time. Everything turns out to be a culinary tour when I'm traveling. One of the places that I ate at was a place called Bidwell Bistro, and I have Wendy, who's the executive chef. We're going to talk about exactly what I ate. Then we're going to be talking about another place, Karen's Bakery. Then I have one of the wineries on. So in the meantime, so let's first start. Let's see. And Wendy, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Wow. That was really good food.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
First let's get to where the bistro is. Let's get people to get where the bistro is.
Oh, well, we are in kind of the middle of Folsom on the corner of East Bidwell and Blue Ravine, actually between Blue Ravine and Montrose. We are sort of in a strip mall location. So not the most glamorous spot, but we're here nonetheless.
And so to get an idea, like, just tell us like a little brief thing about Folsom and the area or that you're at. Or why did you choose? Have you always been in Folsom, by the way?
Me personally have only lived in Folsom for 3 years. I lived in Sacramento before Folsom, but I've been working in Folsom for 9 years.
What made you choose to open up a place in Folsom?
Well, actually, Richard is the owner, Richard Wrighton, and we happen to have a chef friend in common, and when she gave him my name when he needed a chef, he called me, and I kind of didn't really care where the restaurant was because the idea sounded so wonderful. And it just happened to be here in Folsom, which I'd only had a little bit of experience here in this area.
Okay. And so how long have you been chefing?
Actually, today happens to be my 9-year anniversary.
Wow.
And 9 years ago today, I stepped my first foot in the door to work here.
That's great.
It is wonderful.
And I'm sure you must be enjoying it.
I still love it after all these years. You know, I'm not bored, I'm not complacent, and I just look forward to every day at work. It really is a blessing.
Merle, hi, it's Marianne. I'm joining you.
Yeah, Marianne's joining us. Isn't that cool?
Hey, Marianne.
Great. Yes, thank you. Sorry, I had a little problem with my cell signal, but I'm all good to go.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, we had some dinner, huh?
Oh, I'm very proud that Folsom can offer such a great and seasonal menu. I mean, and in such a relaxed setting. So it's a perfect combination, and it makes my job very easy when I can introduce visitors to such a fun dining experience.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marianne.
Absolutely.
So Wendy, let's talk a little about like your signature dishes. Like, well, let's get into. Let's try and see if we remember what we ate.
I remember what you ate.
Okay. What did it, yeah? What kind of things did I mean? We had enough people to be able to share and get the sense of everything.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that you had, which has been on our menu since the day we opened, is the duck confit. The only thing that changes over the course of the years is the season and the accompaniments that go with it. But the duck itself is what we are really known for. We have people drive for miles to come and have it. I've had people tell me they've been to France and have had it and have found ours better. So it really is our crowd pleaser, so to speak.
Well, can you describe to my audience, like, what you do with the duck?
It's a two-day process. We use the leg and thigh meat of what's called a Muscovy duck, which is raised here in California. It's a really flavorful product as opposed to the French use a Moulard duck. So this one is a little bit different. The first day, we marinate it in a lot of sea salt, and some herbs and spices, and we let that sit overnight. And then the second night, we cook it really slowly in duck fat, which you would think sounds, you know, like a donut or a fat-filled, mess. But honestly, what happens is it draws all of the fat from the duck, all the bad fat, and leaves in all the good, tasty fat, which if you think of carnitas in a Mexican restaurant, if you can picture carnitas as duck instead of pork, that's, very, very close to what our product is. And it just is just so flavorful and very, very tender, nearly falls off the bone.
Yeah, I noticed
last night I happened to be walking through the restaurant, and one of the patrons sitting at a table stopped me because I was wearing my Folsom Tourism Bureau shirt, and they thought that I was working for the restaurant. And so I said, well, I'm not the owner, but I'd love to help you. And this couple, who were just very, very nice older couple, said, we just wanted to talk to the chef because we've come here so many times and we always want to try something, but we can't stop ourselves from ordering the duck. We don't know what it is about it, but we absolutely have to order it, and we want to try all these other great things, but we just can't resist. So I thought that was very cute. They were very earnest in wanting to talk to you. I actually sent Richard over to talk to them because they were like, built-in fans right there, total advocates for the brand, saying we love this and we come back and have it. And exactly what you just said, Wendy, they come from quite a distance specifically to enjoy that dinner. So I thought that was totally unsolicited and a really nice compliment.
That is wonderful.
To your preparation.
And the funny thing about it is that's actually a common story that I hear when I meet people is they almost feel guilty that they only order that. And I have to assure them that they're not hurting my feelings when they come and order the duck every time. And I actually think it's wonderful.
What about the sauce?
The sauce that came with it last night, currently, because we are into fall, what I did was I took grapes, which are just starting to come into harvest here in the next month or so, that you'll really start to see some more grape varietals out there. And so I think grapes and balsamic vinegar go very well together. So I took that idea, and with the sauce, I have a little bit of balsamic vinegar and a little bit of grape juice that I reduce down with some shallots and some herbs. And then I add a chicken stock. I don't make duck stock here, unfortunately. I wish I could, but, again, we're a small kitchen. So, and then having the grapes and just sauteing them very gently with some butter and finishing them with balsamic vinegar just to kind of the sweetness and the kind of tartness of the vinegar and the saltiness of the duck. I always try and add a sweet type of element to the duck dish just to kind of balance out the saltiness of the duck. It is one of the most popular combinations. People tend to like that.
So
you know what I had last night? I had the Ono, which was one of the specials for the evening.
Yeah.
Right.
And it had
call it Yoko Ono.
Yoko Ono, yes.
It was delicious. And,
well, thank you.
Really flavorful. I enjoyed it. And I had the heirloom tomatoes with the balsamic syrup, and those were delicious. So I don't know. The meal was kind of a winner from beginning to end, and I thought I was really enjoying the taste of those tomatoes. I know they won't be around that much longer, but they were delicious. And then we had some absolutely
Let me have Wendy describe the Ono, what was in that.
The Ono that I served
so
to you last night.
So everybody will drool,
What we did is I sautéed a little bit of Dungeness crab, and then we had some zucchini diced and also sautéed mixed together with the Dungeness crab. And I had a lemon beurre blanc, which is basically a white wine and shallot reduction with just loads of butter mounted into it to make this silky, rich, delicious sauce. The Ono was pan-seared, and when it came out of the oven, I had made some arugula and walnut pesto that I just sort of kind of mounded on top of the fish after it was cooked. And that was just a few of the heirloom tomatoes just simply seasoned with salt and pepper, just that kind of tangy, freshness of an acidic tomato, just to kind of balance the herbs and the richness of the beurre blanc.
Now let's also, because I want to get into also some of the appetizers that we had.
Mm-hmm. I know that you had the beets and the goat cheese.
That was so good.
Which to me is one of the most quintessential food combinations. To me,
yes.
If
yes.
you have never tried beets and goat cheese together, you're missing out on something really phenomenal.
What I appreciated is it wasn't like just one variety of beets.
No. Yep. We got all three colors in, the Chioga, the Golden, and the Baby Reds. And, you know, being here in California, we're so fortunate to have so many farmers and so many, you know, local growers. I mean, literally most of the produce that we get comes within 100 miles of the restaurant, which is a huge movement right now as far as food goes. You know, eating locally, buying seasonally, all of that, we really try and incorporate as much as we can here at the Bistro. And,
it is a big movement, but I have to say, Wendy, not everyone does it quite as well as you do. So,
well, thank you.
You take the whole concept and then you make it completely delicious, which I think gives the movement a lot of energy. People can appreciate why they want to do it when they taste food that's prepared that way. So,
oh,
right.
Man.
You know, I just, like every chef, you know, you end up developing a style over time. And this is just kind of the style that I've developed over the years. I'm somewhat of a minimalist where I like to just take the ingredient and enhance it with things that I know will make it taste really good without overpowering it, without, you know, kind of hiding. I wouldn't want to drench the beets in something so heavy that you couldn't taste the sweet earthiness of
right.
them.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's just kind of what I like to do is keep it simple to a degree, but just really let the flavors themselves shine on their own.
Yeah, and I also had the squash soup.
That actually is an heirloom squash, which we get from over in West Sacramento. There is a woman named Suzanne Ashworth who has cultivated. She has actually found all these heirloom seeds and all these things that you've probably never heard of. And one of the things that she's really well known for is all of her heirloom squash. With that particular squash we use is called a rampicante. Kind of, that's why I call it heirloom squash, because I put that on the menu. People are going to go, what? And, you know, several other varieties, Choctaw, Tahitian melon. It's just really cool to be able to take something that somebody would probably think is just a butternut squash, but right. really it isn't. It's so much more special than a butternut squash, which, don't get me wrong, I have no problem buying butternut squash either, but... it just, you know, it's just a way to showcase some products that are not really well known, but are delicious nonetheless. And actually
you could say that soup had a little bit of a flair to it, right? It was
a little
kind of
kick
with
curry powder.
Yes.
Yeah, this modest curry powder I put in with and also reduced some apple juice in there, and then just stock and just puree it up. It's like super low fat too. There's no cream. There's no dairy in there. just 100% vegetable and house-made stock. So it's good for you. It tastes good,
wow.
And it's good for you.
Yeah, what a combination. Gotta love that.
Yeah. And what other appetizers did we try?
You also had, I believe you had Caesar salad, if I'm not mistaken, our house Caesar. I know that Marianne mentioned the heirloom tomato salad.
Right.
And I want to say, did you have the pear salad? Now I'm getting kind of fuzzy on your appetizers, but did you have the endive with the Asian pears and the blue cheese and the...
Oh, my gosh, I didn't, but I'm so disappointed that I didn't.
Well, it just went on the menu, Marianne, so have no fear. It'll be here for a while. You can come back for it.
Yeah.
I love Asian pears. Are those locally grown as well?
Yes, they're grown up in Penryn, and the funny thing is the produce company that I buy for, they're always trying to source different farmers and different growers, and they actually got a new grower who has only been selling to the Santa Monica Farmers Market. He has a very small orchard, so his production is not real high, but he was able to negotiate a deal with him to sell some of his beautiful Asian pears to their produce company. So now we're able to get them as well. And
they are delicious. And I don't think you find good ones in that many places. So
no.
That's definitely a local item that is showcased in that salad then.
Absolutely.
All right, so what did everybody – one of us had the – wait a minute. Meat thing. There was
the flat iron steak.
Yes.
Yes, the flat iron steak.
That was nice too. And describe that one.
The flat iron steak is actually kind of an up and coming cut of meat. It's been kind of starting to get popular over the last 6 or 7 years. People tend to think of the chuck part of the cow as you know somewhat tough. But with a flat iron steak, kind of like the skirt steak, if you marinate it and you add some leaven to it, it can be so flavorful and so tender. And it is one of my favorite cuts of meat. And we marinate it in a little red wine vinegar, some shallots and garlic and herbs. And then we sear it with peppercorns. And we use three kinds of peppercorns, pink, white, and black. And so it's like an au poivre. But then what we do is to pair the pepper, we take a sauce made with Point Reyes blue cheese, which is, again, very local out of Sonoma, and add that into a reduction sauce made with port wine and a little balsamic vinegar, a little red wine. It's so good. I haven't had my dinner yet, so I'm starting to get hungry.
I'm thinking, boy, I was eyeing that, and I thought that sauce looked like the perfect accompaniment to that steak. It was really nicely done.
Yeah, thank you. And then we throw some pears in with the vegetable. The green beans are the vegetable on that dish, just to kind of, you know, blend that whole blue cheese and pear kind of combination. That,
right.
You know, again, I'm thinking of things that I know go well together, and I kind of put them in unusual places, like on a steak. Most people wouldn't think to put pears and blue cheese on a steak, you know, but I do.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're local products, and I think that's, you know, one of the things that Merle and I talked about yesterday while we were enjoying such a great dinner was that, you know, California just has an abundance of fresh produce and
Absolutely.
Really access to products that, when done correctly, I think it's just a very unique, fun dining experience, and that's what I'm really pleased that we can bring people to the bistro and treat them to that, because Folsom is perfectly situated to really take advantage of all kinds of unique products, whether it's produce or the fruit that we're talking about that's grown
mm-hmm.
up in the foothills.
Right.
And so it makes it so nice when you actually are going into a restaurant. And for a lot of people, they probably are encouraged to try to prepare some of that food at home, and they never would have done it if they hadn't been introduced to it in a way that where it was well done and maybe kind of, as you said, a surprising application, not something that everybody does, but once they've tried it, they're more likely to go home and give it a shot, and I think
right.
that's really important.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, for some of us, we need the power of the suggestion. You know?
Right.
I never thought about that, but that really worked well together. So.
Right.
Yeah. We had a very happy table.
I'm wondering, Wendy, do you find because of the water in Folsom that it makes a difference in the cooking? because it's about such great water?
You know, that's funny. I've never actually really thought about that, but I suppose that does make a difference. I've honestly never given that much thought.
Well, Merle had an opportunity to tour Gekkei-Kan Sake and also at Kikkoman, and both of those companies for the soy sauce with Kikkoman and the sake at Gekkei-Kan, both of those companies relocated here for a variety of reasons, but certainly one of the more compelling ones was the water quality.
Wow, that's interesting. I never thought of it like that before.
Yeah, so it made a difference in their decision process, and they believe it's really reflected in the quality of their product. So,
I'm sure.
So it's a nice, it's certainly a nice plug for the area, and I know that there's some other production food companies that have considered Folsom specifically because of the water. So you see, you didn't even know that was giving you an added bonus in your food prep, but it probably
I'm going to start using that now. That's great.
No, you're ready to roll.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny because I wonder if it makes a difference, like when people are having coffee or tea, and they're not knowing why it tastes better.
Why it tastes better, right.
And they're thinking it might be the coffee versus that it's the water.
The water, absolutely.
Yeah. But
Wendy, one of the other things you recommended to Merle was that honey ginger ice cream that you had made yesterday.
Yes, and how was that? I know it didn't quite set up as much as I would have liked to. It didn't quite freeze well enough, but...
Who gave a shit? I was delicious.
Okay. Oh, that's the best.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah.
We actually all had a taste because it was so delicious. So I don't think it was a problem, Wendy.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yay.
There was an apple sorbet or something on that. Mm-hmm.
Apple cider sorbet.
God. Yes, and then we had the lemon ice cream on there as well.
Right. That was good.
And I make all of those here. I bought myself a little, one-quart ice cream maker, and... I can't really make for the whole restaurant. So the vanilla bean ice cream that we put on our profiteroles, we do buy that from Bud's in San Francisco. But the other ones, I've been having a lot of fun. I'm not, really a well-trained pastry chef. I do some. I think I do okay. And making the ice creams has really been, a fun new experience for me. It's not something that I've really done very much of. So I've been having a good time with that for sure.
Well, one of the Folsom people at our table mentioned at dessert time that she comes to Bidwell Street Bistro specifically to get the creme brulee because she thinks that you have the perfect finish on that dessert and that the texture and taste is exactly. And Merle, I think you tend to agree with that when you're tasting it.
Yes, I definitely agreed on that.
Well, thank you. That actually is one of the things that I'm very grateful for. I had a French chef help us open the bistro. He was a consultant, and he had given me this creme brulee recipe, and I too agree. Just it's light. I don't like creme brulee when it kind of coats the roof of your mouth because the texture is so thick. And this it's just very light. It almost melts away. But then again, you get the beautiful candy crunch of the sugar on top, which reminds you that you're really eating creme brulee.
Yes, exactly.
Well, it looked and tasted great. So we circulated that one around as well. So, yeah, it was a very nice finish to the meal.
One of the things I wanted to ask you about, Wendy, was about the raspberries.
Mm-hmm.
Where did you get the raspberries from?
Raspberries, again, that comes from my produce company, and the brand that we're using currently, which they've been stocking, is Driscoll's. And
Driscoll's?
Those are Driscoll's. Believe it or not, they're beautiful, aren't they?
I was very surprised at you saying that because these particular raspberries didn't have those little tiny seeds that get into your teeth.
Oh, they didn't?
No, that's why I was wondering.
Interesting.
And when I was at a raspberry festival, I was in Bellingham, Washington, in Washington State.
Oh, uh-huh.
And that's where all these raspberries are coming from, except Driscoll's, when they do it, because then when they ship it, they're not shipping it when it's ripe, totally ripe, but it can't because by the time, you know.
Right.
And so what happens is what I had found out, because we had gone, there was a winery that had raspberry wine, so they had their own, growing their own raspberries. So they told us on the riders, they said, oh, go, you know, pick up, you can taste them and whatever. We couldn't eat enough of them. And they were just totally ripened. And I said, I don't understand. How come there's no old tiny seeds? And that's when they said, because you're eating it ripe. And when you're eating it, you know, when you're getting it frozen or whatever, they're not ripe when they're sent. And I went, look at
right.
that. That's
well,
what it's about.
It must be because, you know, this is still technically berry season.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that that has, I mean, because unfortunately raspberries is one of those things that I do source out year-round. They're just the perfect foil for a chocolate cake. It's hard to find a foil for chocolate cake in the middle of winter, you know, when all you really have is dates and, you know, some of these citrus, you know. There really isn't a whole lot of beautiful fruit available in the middle of winter. So I do tend to source those out year-round, but you do see when things are truly in season that they're actually way better when it's that time of year. So
yeah. So wait, you got any plans? Any plans that you're going to do with the restaurant or some kind of, or anything you want to experiment with or something?
You know, actually, we have been fortunate enough to have been approached by some investors who would like to open a restaurant in El Dorado Hills.
Wow.
So we are planning on opening a fancy smanchy burger bar. With all different kinds of hamburgers, which is all the rage in the United States right now, as I'm sure you've traveled around and heard about.
Right.
Everybody on the planet wants to open a burger bar. You know, it is America's favorite cuisine. I don't know anybody who doesn't like to go out and have a good hamburger and some fries and, you know, a beer or a shake or a soda. And the concept that we wanted to do is casual like we are here at the Bistro, offer a full bar with liquor, beer, and wine, and just make some really good-tasting hamburgers where, again, we're not looking to bust your wallet open and just want to have some straightforward, really delicious food. And that way we can still be here at the Bistro without worrying about what's happening at the burger bar.
Right. So you're going to do something in there with the burgers of different types of things that go on the burger.
Different types of ingredients on the burger, and then also different types of burgers themselves. You know, there's everything from certified Angus ground beef to all natural. We have two types of all natural that are, you know, within our, I don't want to say our general area. One of them's up in Oregon, which still isn't that far away. It's an all natural product. The other one is actually down in Central California, you know, a different type of all-natural product. There's American Kobe. There's bison from Colorado. There's ground lamb from Colorado. So we actually have some ideas to use actual different ingredients for the burgers themselves and then, you know, to pair them, obviously, with the types of accompaniments and the buns. And we'll have some onion rings and some French fries and Just keep it
Wendy,
very
it's so funny you say
burger-ish.
That because I went to an event the other night at a very upscale place in San Francisco, and one of the most popular components of the event was they had a slider burger bar.
Yeah,
and
that's
it was
sliders.
Kobe
yeah.
with Kobe beef. Another one was like a turkey derivative, and then there was a vegetable option.
Right.
They were all basically sliders, and then they had the accompaniments at the end, and they had like sweet potato fries and regular fries, and I could not believe the line of people. It's like, people were just loving it. So
they love it.
A great idea.
It's a knockout. I mean, it really is a home run for the customer. And as long as again, we want to do it right. We want to produce the best tasting burgers we can. And so that's kind of where we're headed next. Again, it's not going to affect us here at the Bistro, but it will be something that we've been able to put our signature on in another venue. So it'll be good for us.
Yeah. When is there you got a website? for the
We do have a website.
Which is, yeah.
It is www.bidwellstreetbistro. Street is spelled out, the full word, StreetBistro. Bidwell is BIDWELL.com. And we do keep our menus current on the website as long as well as special events coming up and directions. So,
great. Fabulous. Well, I appreciate you calling. I mean, that's, you know, I love to get my listeners, like, drooling. You know?
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having us on the show. It really was a pleasure to have you in for dinner last night and to meet you. And,
yeah, keep up the good work. We all love
Thank you. Thank you. I sure will. Marianne, thank you so much for all of your kind words and your promotions.
My
and
pleasure.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
It's just great.
I'll see you soon. Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, sounds good. Thank
all
you.
Right, good night.
Good night.
Great. Bye.
Bye.
That was really cool, huh? God. I'm stuffed right now.
Well, you've had a very busy few days up in the gold country, Merle.
Yeah, well, while we're waiting for, I think, is it John, I think, the winery to call in, let's talk a little about the Folsom now.
Okay, I'd love to. Well, I think we picked this as your starting point to introduce you to the gold country, Merle, because Folsom is so perfectly situated. You know, it was about a 30-minute drive from the Sacramento airport, and I think when we got off the freeway, we started talking about how surprising it is that Folsom, which is inland in the state of California, has so much water all around it. The American River goes right through Folsom, and in addition, Lake Natoma and Folsom Lake are two huge water recreation areas that are easy to access when you're in the city of Folsom. Lake Natoma is for non-powered watercraft like kayaks and sailboats, and Folsom Lake is, of course, more of the water ski and wakeboarder venue. They both have fishing, and so for people who are coming to Northern California, it's a very big surprise to recognize that even though they've left the coast, they haven't left the water, and those options are all available. We're about an hour and a half from South Lake Tahoe, and I think for a lot of people who want to explore the gold country, Folsom is the perfect place to start. We have a lot of very comfortable hotels. We have brand hotels for people who want to use their frequent rewards for people who are in honors or rewards programs, and they can do that when they're in Folsom. Additionally, and I think you and I were looking at this, the miles of trails, paved paths for cyclists makes it an incredible recreation point. So you can do the rent a bike and take a very easy trail, and at the same time, people who are more serious cyclists can get out and really use the Folsom Trails for training. And from a recreational standpoint, it's hard to beat the amenities that are here. So I think we had a chance to introduce a little bit of that to you.
Okay. Well, we're going to take – I want to take a break to get one of my sponsors. And then right after that, I think we got to going to be talking about some wonderful olive oil and some funny-sounding wine. So hang on a second while we take a commercial break.
Okay.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Uh-huh. We have extra legroom as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. No, that is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room. I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, Stretch out. We now have the most leg room in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
Don't you love that commercial?
Yes, isn't that's great.
Isn't that hysterical?
Yes. Never heard it before.
Well, we want to now get into the whole thing about, well, before we get to about the wine, I want to talk about this thing with the olive oil. So introduce yourself so when we know, like, who the heck is calling. Go ahead. Tell us who you are.
This is John Hottie. I'm the winemaker and sort of the manager at Bray Vineyards in the Shenandoah Valley in Plymouth, California.
Yeah. And so when we what you're doing is you're growing the olives, right?
That's true. They're sort of ornamental in some degree because the driveway and the roadway are lined with these olive trees. But we had some friends that picked them for a while and made olive oil out of it, but the trees finally matured, and we decided to do it ourselves, and that was very good with these folks because it was becoming too big a project for them. They were just doing it for fun. So anyway, yes, the olive trees seem to grow very well in our area. And if you look at your little globe, we're at the same latitude that Tuscany is. So, olive oil, is sort of, in the past, has always been associated with Italy. But now we're hoping Californians and the U.S. is willing to accept that California can make some really good olive oil.
Well, I tried stomping on the olives. And it doesn't work.
No.
No.
They're pretty hard.
It's really the pits, I tell you.
Well, it is.
Yeah.
Because each one of them has one.
But what you're doing is basically, so you're growing the olives, and then you're sending them off someplace else.
Yes. The equipment to crush them and make them into olive oil is rather expensive. And, we really don't. In the scheme of things, we really don't have that many to justify the cost of having our own equipment. So we take it to a reputable olive oil producer down in Modesto, California, and they've been in the business probably close to 100 years or so. And so we're allowed to take them down there, and they crush our olives and make sure that we get the oil back from our own olives, and so that's what we're doing right now.
Now, I know I tasted the extra virgin olive oil, which is absolutely wonderful, but I never realized that you're dealing with, it's a combination of different olives? Is that what I was catching?
Well, that's what we do. Some places try to keep the particular varietals separate, sort of like what wineries do with their grapes.
Mm-hmm.
But our particular blend is just we pick them all and combine them. And so our olive oil is unique to us because no one has the exact same count of the particular number of trees of the particular varietal that we have. So anyway, it's worked for us, and like you, people like it.
Is that a usual thing that when you're having olive oil that you're getting combinations or more usual that it'll be one type?
I'm not sure. I'm sort of new at this. The oil that you tasted today was the second year that we've produced our own.
Okay.
So I don't really know what people do. I think in most cases, it's probably a combination of a couple of trees, but in our case, we have the the oil that you tasted today probably was 7 or 8 different kinds of olives, and olives are olives, and they all have, like grapes, they all have a different, and apples, they have a different flavor.
Right.
And you just put them together, and sometimes the combination is better than one particular one. Because if you don't like that particular one, then you're not going to like the olive oil. So, but if you blend them, you know, you have a chance of taking all the best of all of the particular varietals and just making a unique combination. And as you taste it today, it works.
Now, do you find it, I mean, it's becoming, I guess, more and more that California is growing olives and having olive oil versus getting imported from Greece and Italy and Spain and whatever. How do you see the olive oil in the States in terms of a comparison?
Well, you know, we're just a very small producer, so I really can't speak for the industry of itself, but I think that it's primarily the public is accepting olive oil, and they are accepting the fact that they don't have to pay higher prices for the imports that California, you know, we have the ability to grow, you know, really good olives, and if the production of it is quality, then you'll end up with a good product. And I think people are, you know, the press is very good lately about you know, telling the public that olive oil is pretty good for you. You know that Europeans eat all these things, and they eat their olive oil, and they're probably more healthy than we are here in the States.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is just one of those ingredients in our lifestyle that by having olive oil instead of some of the other things that we tend to use, that, you know, maybe we might be healthier too. And I know, at least in California, the residents are, you know, really dialed into this attitude and view of, you know, improving their own life. So that's probably all I can say about that.
Well, one of the things I got a kick out of is your insignia. Tell everybody about the insignia.
Oh, the brazen hussy? Is that what you're?
Well, no,
you're alluding
to?
Oh, the tractor.
Yes.
Yeah, the guy in the tractor. Well, that was just a. It sort of evolved. The owner received this California version of a caution sign, which is a person on a tractor, and for his birthday. And we had it sitting around the tasting room for a while, and then one day we tipped it up on its side, so it was sort of a diamond-shaped almost. And then the owner had a friend that has a sign company and had the black stuff that they make those signs out of, and he created an arm with a bottle of wine on it and stuck it on there. And anyway, people, you know, over a year or so we had it in the tasting room there, and people just really were attracted to it and got a big laugh out of it. So we finally found someone that could make the signs, and then we went to putting that sign on T-shirts. We do a yellow, which is the normal caution sign, and then black T-shirts where all the colors were reversed. And, boy, we have a hard time keeping them in stock because everyone's just attracted to them.
And what's the words that it says on there again?
It says farm responsibly.
Yeah.
As he's drinking his wine on
his
track.
Yeah, right.
Which
now let me suppose
people would take offense to, but nobody does.
Well, since your winery, I want to get into that particular that one wine that we were the was the brazen hussy.
Yeah, the brazen hussy. Yeah, the owner one night after sampling, of course, a lot of our own product. We were looking for a name for some, for a wine that we could price, you know, lower than anything else, so that, you know, the general public that came in, maybe they didn't really care that much for wine, but at least, you know, they could walk away with a bottle of wine that might be fun to them or remind them of where they had been. And so he came up with the Brazen Hussy, because Bray being the name of the vineyard or winery, Bray, and it's over 50% Zinfandel, so Zin, so Bray Zin, and then we just added Hussy for no particular reason other than it was for its laughter factor. So anyway, it's been our best seller, and people always remember it because it does have our name in it. So that's it served two purposes.
Yeah, and the wine itself, it's a combination of grapes.
Yeah, right? it's a blend of Zinfandel and Sangiovese, both being more or less Italian varietals. Zin, it's always questioned as to what country really holds claim to that one, but Sangiovese is the primary grape varietal that the Italians put in their Chianti. And there again, as I mentioned earlier, being on the same latitude as the Tuscany area of Italy, that grape grows very well in the Shenandoah Valley. And we have a lot of it planted on the winery property. And so it's just turned out to be a very nice blend. Sangiovese being a little bit higher in acid, it's a good food grape. And the wine is just, you know, we try to improve it a little bit every year. And anyway, it's just been a fun wine, and people keep coming back for it.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed it today.
Oh, yeah, I did. I mean, and
I
don't drink red wine. So
right.
But you were saying it's like 50% less tannins or something that you were saying with that, right?
Well, because Zinfandel, as a varietal, tends not to have too many tannins.
Right.
And
grapes
that are grown in our area tend not to have a lot of tannins, like the grapes that you would typically find in Napa. Our growing conditions are quite a bit different. We get a lot more sun. We don't get the rain. We don't have any fog. So the tannins tend to, you know, we just don't have the high tannins in our wines, and which we feel make them more easily drinkable and just user-friendly. You don't have to have food with them necessarily. You can have a glass of wine without and just enjoy it on its own as a beverage.
And but I also, I mean, I did get to taste some of the other wines, which is,
mm-hmm.
you know, I mean, after, you know, one winery going, having gone from one winery to another. But that's really cool. But we're going to get to this again, because I'm going to do a tasting while doing a radio show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I'm going to get the olive oil when you send the olive oil and the wine. So what I'm going to do is, while I'm doing another radio show, I'm going to say that I'm still continuing to eat and drink.
There you go.
even when I'm not there, the things from there. Now, can people go on your website and purchase? Can they purchase the olive oil, or they can only purchase the wine?
They can do both. Actually, you know, alcohol is one of those commodities that the United States is still sort of puritanical about, so every state has their own laws.
Right, then you have to look at that first to see if you can.
Exactly, and, you know, when wineries say they can't send wine to a particular state, it just means really that they don't have enough customers to afford to buy the license to send to that state.
Okay.
We have we have about 20 or I don't know 16 or so states where we do have a license that we can legally ship to you guys. And if you go on our website, which is www.brayvineyards.com, it will prompt you for your state. And if it's one of the states that we don't ship to, then you're just unfortunately out of luck. You have to come visit us. But olive oil,
well, wouldn't be out of
alcoholic product, we can
yeah,
ship that to anybody that wants it. So, but we're running really low on last year's olive oil. So you might have to you wait till after the around the first of the year when we get our new olive oil made. But anyway, you can view the different products we make. We make about 16 different varietals of wine, and some of them are sort of unusual, but they're all good.
And I'm just curious, let's say if I got the olive oil like next year, would it be a different variety? Would it be a different taste?
Well, it's a agricultural product, and the weather.
I mean, would
and
you be combining the same olives?
Yes, we will.
Oh, okay.
We don't have any new ones coming on board.
Oh, okay.
This year, so.
And
it
I just wanted to get in the thing with the Kalamata. Is that it?
Oh, the Kalamata.
Yeah.
That's right. You were tasting some of them.
Yes, and could you explain like what you did with them?
Well, I usually take a bucket or two of the green ones and make those into eating olives. But we do have 7 mature trees of Kalamata olives, which are the typical one, the black ones that you would have in your Greek salad.
Mm-hmm.
And those I process differently because they are black. They're a little more ripe than what the green ones would be. And so I just process those in water and probably 2 or 3 cups of salt in a 5-gallon pail. And I do that and change the water about every week. But it takes about 2 to 3 months for that to leach out the bitterness in olives. I don't
right.
know if anybody has ever, any of your folks have ever seen the olives on a tree and tried to bite into one, but they're just miserable. It takes you an hour to get that bitterness out of your mouth. But so that's what you have to do to cure or to make them edible is to
right.
leach that bitterness out of it. And with the Kalamatas, I just use regular salt. You can't use iodized salt, so you have to make sure that you get like a canning salt or something like that. But anyway, it's sort of a long process, but when
yeah.
you get all done, you have something that's pretty good.
Yeah, certainly is.
Yeah.
So, well, I appreciate you calling, talking to us about this.
Well,
and,
thank you. And
you know, when
enjoyable
people,
meeting you today.
Yeah, I hope when people come out this way, that that's one of the things that they get to do is come to your place for a tasting on all that. Now that we have what I guess we're going to term the new Napa.
No, well,
area.
I hope we don't ruin it, and like they have had to just because they get because they're so popular. But anyway, it's the Shenandoah Valley is sort of like Napa was 30 years ago. You know,
mm-hmm.
we very few people charge for wine tasting, but it's because we're so close to the capital of California. We're only 45 miles away from Sacramento. People have discovered us, and so the crowds are coming, and with that, you know, you get the good and the bad, but anyway, it's still a wonderful area, and especially in the wintertime when we get some rain back and the hills are green, and it's just a nice, comfortable place to be.
Great. Well, I certainly enjoyed it.
Well, thank you.
So, all right, I'll be in touch with you again. Especially while I'm, at my computer and my,
okay.
my home and drinking and munching and whatever.
Oh, there you go. Let me know when you need a refill.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks again. And have
You're
a good
welcome.
Evening.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. That was, those olives were really good. You still there, Marianne? Marianne?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I'm going to take, I got to tell you, what do you call it? My crew hasn't showed up yet.
Oh. Oh, my goodness. They got delayed today.
Yeah, but I don't know. What I want to do is I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to play a song and then go across the hall and see if they happen to have checked in. And then right after that, we're going to get back to talking about Folsom and about what we had at Karen's Bakery.
Okay.
And by the way,
right.
by the way, you know what we wound up doing with the desserts?
No, what did you do?
We wound up taking it today over to the restaurant they were eating at tonight, and we had those desserts for dessert.
Well, perfect.
And then to go, I had one of their desserts that I took to go.
So everything got appreciated. That's perfect.
Oh yeah. So let me take a music break and go across the hall and see if they possibly have at least checked in, and I'll be right back. Okay.
No problem.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, come on, let's go.
We starve look. One another short of breath, walking proudly in our winter coats, wearing smells from laboratories, facing a dying nation of moving paper fantasy, listening for the new told lies. My future on films in space. Silence tells me secretly everything. Man
on Broadway, I'll tell you. Okay, let's get back to talking a little bit here. But I wonder who I got. Okay. Yeah, okay, so let's get back to Folsom. Did you like, by the way, did
Sounds great.
Did you ever see Hair, by the way? The show, the Broadway show?
I have.
Huh?
Yes, I have. Loved it.
Yeah, and now that it's revised, that's, I mean, I wish I could, like, see it, like, five times. I mean, it was just, it's something else. Anyway, let's get back to Folsom.
Okay.
And the thing, let's go to talking about, I don't know what I did with the piece of paper with what we had at Karen's Bakery. Do you have?
Oh. I do. I don't have it in front of me, although I know that you had a great chicken salad.
Right. There was a chicken salad that had a mango chutney in it, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was served with some other fresh ingredients, and I don't have my computer open in front of me, or I would have the menu.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but... And you want me to get that when we can talk about a few other things, and I'll be happy to find it for you.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, no problem.
Okay,
I said, let me find that. I'll bring it up on
okay.
the computer, and I can tell you what was on there. So
hold
on a second.
Okay, that's great. By the way, I found my crew, thank God. I don't know. I didn't
Did you find your crew, Mo?
I found my crew, yes. I didn't get the story yet as to whether they got lost or did, you know. I think my guess is that with their the cell phone, there's
uh-huh.
a GPS on the cell phone, and they weren't getting reception.
Oh.
So I guess if they weren't getting reception, they weren't getting the directions either.
I see. Okay.
That's the sense that I got, the little bit of it. But what I wound up doing, I mean, they're happy because at least I gave them their dinner. Because I wanted
a very delicious dinner, it probably is.
Well, I wanted to make sure that they had dinner since they couldn't come to dinner with me, you know. Felt
absolutely.
So bad. And, you know, one of the things that's going to be really great that I was kind of discussing with Maureen was because I'm not going to be able to, like, do everything in Folsom and stuff, that Nancy
mm-hmm.
and Barbara can partake in the things. They can kind of get the photos and YouTube toward me, and then I can continue writing about what's in the area. This way they can focus more on, like, some more adventurous stuff that I probably wouldn't be doing or don't have time on this trip.
Right, exactly.
And this way I can, you know, get more information out there. And as a matter of fact, what I'm going to do is when they do it, then I'll have them on the radio and we'll talk about what they did and be able to have the photos, et cetera, et cetera. That's the one thing that's going to be really great about having them out here, huh?
Oh, I think that's perfect. All right, let me tell you a little bit. I'm opening up the Karen's menu for you, so let me tell you a little bit about what you were enjoying there.
Okay.
All right, here it comes. Let's see. You had Okay, a mango chicken salad.
Okay.
Which had, as you already mentioned, the mango chutney with the chicken salad. You had the Mediterranean pasta salad with the tiny orecchiette pasta and the Kalamata olives, three tomatoes, red onion, toasted pine nuts, and an orange curry vinaigrette. That was one of my favorites, actually, and I have some of that as well.
That's the one that we got to go for you.
Yeah, that was delicious. And then she also has a fresh salmon pasta salad that has grilled salmon with bow tie.
Mm-hmm.
Dill, red onions, and a ground mustard dressing. I think you have some of the summer corn salad as well.
Yeah.
It had goat cheese and fresh basil and an apple cider vinaigrette with summer corn and cherry tomatoes. Let me see what else there. Boy, you had some great stuff. I didn't know you'd had a chance to enjoy all this. Oh, there was also one of her menu items is called the Change of Weather Stew, and it has smoked turkey and end-of-summer corn and okra all blended together in a stew.
Yes.
And then you also had her toasted ham sandwich, which was a local ham, Bledsoe ham, and a homemade plum jam, mustard, and grilled frisée, and it was served on toasted jalapeno cheddar bread. Now, if that doesn't make you want to bite into the sandwich, I don't know what would. And then she gave you a nice assortment of some of her most requested dessert. She gave you her brownie dried cherry chocolate cookie and her raspberry thumbprint, her lemon crumb muffin, one of her crocodiles, which is I see many people requesting that crocodile when they're there. And then she made a plum galette with, which was delicious, salted caramel cake, and a mocha nut cake. So those are some of the items that were listed on your menu.
Yeah, so that's what we had for dessert at a different restaurant.
Brought by Karen from Folsom. Well, Merle, we wouldn't do Karen's justice unless we mentioned all the cyclists that like to hang out at Karen's because she's got that beautiful patio and it's so close to the bike trail.
Oh, yes. Go ahead. Tell us.
Well, two things about Karen's. One is its location is perfect. People that are out enjoying all the easy recreation in Folsom can head there. She not only has great seasonal food and homemade desserts, but she also makes great coffee beverages. And so that's certainly a big plus about Karen's. And then secondly, she has a wedding business, and she makes some of the most beautiful wedding cakes. And they just filmed for a cable TV show there about fabulous wedding cakes, and she did some instruction there at her bakery in the back. So
cool.
That's another facet of her business that is very appreciated by a lot of people locally because she makes such a high-quality product. And a little bit like earlier in your show when you had on Wendy from Bidwell Street Bistro, she's able to tell you which of the local growers she's buying from, why she's purchasing those items, and how she's using them. And I think a lot of people just, when you go into her bakery, she always has seasonal decorations, and the food you're eating and the setting you're eating it in reminds you of what season that you're appreciating. So it's a perfect combination.
Oh, yeah. You know, one of the things that in terms of, like, the two restaurants, I wouldn't say that either is better than the other, just too different.
Too right, different. Very different.
But both in terms of quality, it's just absolutely wonderful. You know,
well, and I think that probably from the freeway, Folsom looks like a suburb, and so that's why I was so pleased that we had a chance to highlight those restaurants for you because it helps differentiate what we have to offer. And it is certainly on their own. They're a great reason to come visit. But in conjunction with the other things there are to do, it makes it into a great getaway destination. So,
oh, sure.
Very surprising because people don't expect that when they're driving past us on the freeway. But once they've done that detour, we usually get them to come back because they enjoy it.
Well, a couple of things that I missed, which – it's not too adventuresome. I mean, but I would love to come back to see the. I love going to zoos and I love going to aquariums and I got to jab both. I mean, they may probably not the biggest things going, but that it still have. It's still something, you know,
right.
Two more things to see. And
well,
I
actually,
also went. Yeah.
The zoo is a very non-traditional zoo. It's actually considered a wildlife sanctuary. And it's I would consider it to be on the smaller side, which makes it perfect for families that are visiting or for people that want to just have a quick visit but don't necessarily want to spend the better part of their day touring the zoo. They have animals, both animals that they've rescued from domestic pets, like people that think it would be fun to have a mountain lion or something like that as a pet, and then realize they've gotten in way over their heads and they need help. They also rescue animals that are injured. And the really interesting thing, Merle, is that when you go to that zoo, as you walk around, the story of the animal that's in that particular exhibit is profiled on the front. So you get a chance to learn a little bit about how that animal came to the zoo. And they've done, the community has really supported this zoo, and they have had a lot of Boy Scouts and adult volunteers who have worked hard in conjunction with the city to build very natural habitats. And so the animals that are there are in many cases just really in the perfect environment for their species or for their particular needs. And they also have a lot of peacocks, wild peacocks that are out behind the zoo. And sheepdogs that are and herding dogs that are on display. So the zoo has a lot of fun amenities. And right around the zoo, actually, is the cricket train, which is a train that adults and children can ride on. And it goes around the outside of the zoo and the city park that's adjacent to it. And it's there to because it's a fun thing to do, but also because you might have remembered when you were near my office that Folsom was the terminus of the railroad. When the Transcontinental Railroad was built, the end of the line ended up being in Folsom, and it was in Folsom that all those people that were seeking their fortune in gold loaded their wagons and headed to Coloma, which is about 30 minutes from here. And still to this day, you can go to Coloma, which is in El Dorado County, directly adjacent to Folsom, and you can see some of the original structures that were part of John Sutter's gold operation and that are right on the banks of the American River where gold was discovered. So, those are, as I mentioned earlier, one of the biggest attractions to me about Folsom is how many fun things you can do while you're here, but also it's so easy to get to some of these other California landmarks that people are very interested in seeing. So,
well, the other thing I wanted to also comment in terms of the railway that you can, it's like it goes right into Sacramento.
Absolutely. Amtrak runs right into Sacramento, and then in Sacramento you can get on to regional transit and the light rail system,
right,
and it comes out to Folsom. So it's the neat thing was that opened a few years ago, and so it's basically echoing what originally happened in that the end of the light rail line is now in Folsom.
So how long does it take? Yeah.
To get to Folsom and into Sacramento is a 35-minute train ride.
Okay.
And then from Sacramento itself, you can get on Amtrak and head to San Francisco, and that's about a two-hour train trip.
Oh, okay. Now, a couple of other things I wanted to mention, because last night I stayed at the Larkspur Inn.
Larkspur
Landing, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
it's a very nice property in Folsom. I hope you found it to be very comfortable. They have a nice atmosphere, and it's an all-suite hotel, so you have a perfect opportunity if you're bringing guests with you or you want to use the kitchen facilities.
Yeah, that was really nice that you can cook if you want.
Right. And the entire hotel is set up that way. And let's not forget the warm cookies in the lobby. That's always a plus.
Well, I had no room.
You missed the cookies?
I had no.
Oh, you didn't have any room because you ate all those Karens.
I said I would. They look very pretty. They're heart shaped. I just can't do it.
Yeah, you have to say no to something, Merle.
Yeah, right. Right now, I just want to kind of mention that right now I'm in Sutter Creek, and I'm at the Days Inn here, and I'm in a suite over here, doing the show. And
isn't Sutter Creek charming?
Yes. Yes, it is. And I'm going to be probably getting into more about Sutter Creek and stuff like that on another show. I have to tell you, I'm going to be doing a number of radio shows on this whole trip until I get to everything, until I've covered everything I've done and even more.
Well, you were on the go while you were here, so I think that helps us to remember how much there is to do. So I appreciated your hanging in there with us and going along to the ride on all that part of the trip.
Yeah, and I did get to go into Old Folsom, downtown Folsom, and we went into, is it Snooks?
Oh, well, you know, Snooks is a Folsom tradition, and that's right there on Sutter Street in historic Folsom, and that Gold Rush architecture, perfect backdrop. You go in, and the Snooks family have had candy making as their main business for at least three generations, and I'm sure you saw some of the photos when you were in there. Jim Snook is currently the owner and proprietor, and his parents were in that business, and he's likewise is training his son in the fine art of candy making. Their real claim to fame is peanut brittle. They make the perfect tasting, perfect consistency, and they actually ship their peanut brittle all over the United States. They also make their own chocolate there and their own caramel corn. They specialize in truffles, and they do a lot of truffles for events and weddings in the area. So they have quite a diverse business. They make caramel apples, and they even have ice cream. So, I mean, there really is something for everyone's sweet tooth at Snooks. When I go to trade shows, I order 5 pounds of peanut brittle broken into small pieces, and it really honestly doesn't matter. It's my secret weapon because it doesn't matter what the trade show's about. People circle by, and sometimes I see the same people coming back 2 to 3 times. They're a little sheepish, but they're reaching in to grab a piece of that peanut brittle because it's addictive. Once you start eating it, you want to keep eating it, and because it's the texture. It's got the perfect thinness, perfect snap, and it's very fresh. And so it's always a huge hit when I take it to events where we're trying to promote Folsom, and it's very fun to talk about the Smith family and what a great job they do for the community.
Yeah. Well, I know we have to get this in, so we might as well, about the prison. So let's talk about it.
Can't talk about Folsom and not talk about Johnny. They go together.
Okay. So there I went. But I didn't go to the prison. Actually, what you do is you go to the museum.
Right. The museum is actually directly outside the East Gate, and the East Gate of Folsom State Prison is probably one of the most photographed prison entrances in the entire world, and there's a lot of footage and photographs, and I think you were able to purchase one yesterday, Merle,
right.
A photograph of
Johnny Cash
when he performed his world-famous concert in 1968, and the shots that were taken there outside of the East Gate are world-famous. That album, of course, Johnny Cash Live at Folsom Prison, was the number one selling album in the United States for quite a few years. It outsold all kinds of famous pop and rock groups, and it forever cemented his hold on American history. So a lot of people from all over the world come to Folsom Prison because they want to see the place where Johnny sang and the place that he sang about. And, of course, Folsom Prison Blues, as many people know, is one of his top 5 or 6 hits, and so people want to come and see the location. And Folsom Prison on its own is one of California's oldest prisons, and it does have its original architecture. It has a rich history, and, of course, people are kind of fascinated by the culture and what happens there. So at the moment, it's only with special permission and clearance that people are able to go inside to see the prison. For the majority of the visitors, they come to see the museum, see some of the photography, learn a little bit about its history and how it came to be here in Folsom, and have a chance to kind of remember some of the nostalgia that goes with Johnny Cash. But it does mean that Folsom gets recognized all over the world, and it's hard to imagine many places you can go to where someone isn't going to make a joke about Folsom Prison because they think that they go together. So, and they do. And there is some wonderful history that's attached to the prison out there. So,
yeah.
You got a Johnny Cash T-shirt, didn't you, Merle?
Yes, I did.
No trip to Folsom's complete without a Johnny Cash T-shirt.
Yep,
so there you go.
I got a collection of T-shirts already.
I heard. I saw a few. They're very nice.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, they're great. It's wonderful. So now, do we miss anything about Folsom that we want to get in? I
think probably the only thing we might mention, in addition to, I know you're going to talk at another time about the sake and the soy sauce.
Right. Yeah, I will.
You did
when
you weren't here.
Another show. Yeah.
That's a whole other show. Probably just I think back, as I mentioned earlier, about Folsom's location and also the events that occur here are certainly a reason that a lot of people visit the area. The Folsom Chamber of Commerce puts on the Folsom Pro Rodeo, which in 2010 is going to be celebrating its 50th year. It's one of the longest-running events in Northern California, and it's one of the largest PRCA-sanctioned rodeos west of the Mississippi. And it's kind of surprising to people because Folsom is also home to Intel Corporation and a lot of other cutting-edge technology companies, and yet this rodeo has stayed in the community, and part of it is because people feel it's very tied to our roots, and also it occurs over the 4th of July. It's a great celebration of patriotism, and it's a community event. It's kind of the small town meets big town, and that's what some of the events in Folsom are about, and specifically the rodeo. Part of the rodeo, and I don't know if you got a chance to hear about this, Merle, that is an interesting part, is that we have a live cattle drive that occurs right down Sutter Street where you were earlier today.
Right.
And I know they have that in Fort Worth, Texas, as an example, but most people don't expect to see one in California. But the day before the rodeo, the stock contractor brings his cattle right down Sutter Street, and it's a great photo op, and it's a very fun event for our families here in Folsom to see those long steer cattle coming right down the main street. So it's a little bit of an unusual twist on the events that most people attach to the rodeo, and it's one of a Folsom favorite. So we've been doing that for quite a few years.
Okay, that's great. Yep. Well, as I said, you know, we're gonna have my crew do some things that I didn't get to do. we'll be back talking more about Folsom and this whole. I'll do another show Saturday night. I'll be on the radio, and try to get as much of that, of some more of this trip. But we'll keep going with this for sure.
We're really glad that you had a chance to spend some time with us, and we appreciate all the interest you had in our area. And I think for your listeners, hopefully they have a chance to consider their plans for coming to Northern California. They go to visitfolsom.com. We have some sample itineraries and information specifically about Folsom. And then for this Gold Country region where we cooperatively market to visitors and have them come in and explore what we have to do, they can go to calgold.org, and that website not only has information about Sacramento and Amador and Calaveras counties, but also the other Gold Country counties and some of the amenities that they have, whether that's recreation or wineries. I think there's a lot of surprises, and your visitors and your listeners would be well served to consider coming out to check us out. So
yeah,
we'll look forward to welcoming
some
of your listeners to Folsom, and I'm really happy that we had a chance to have you as our guest.
Great, and I'm loving every minute of it.
Great.
Keep
us posted on your progress.
I will.
I'll look forward to your associates coming in so we can get them started on some of those adventures.
Yes.
Okay, Merle. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Talk
have
you
a great
soon.
Evening.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, yeah. So I'm going to end it, well, not that much early. It's only like... So, tune in on Saturday.